This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The city of Cincinnati had a total of 30 reported hate crimes in 2018, according to the latest FBI statistics available. Those numbers fell by 27% from 2017, but still, they're among the highest number of hate crimes per capita among Ohio cities. The recently released 2018 Federal Hate Crime Reports breakdown shows that most Cincinnati hate crimes were committed because of the victim's race or ethnicity. The next highest motivation was the victim's religion. On Monday, Cincinnati Edition assembled a local panel of community activists to gauge their reactions. And joining me now to discuss this data are Barbara Perez. She's the president and CEO of the YWCA. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you.
We also have with us Jackie Congito. She's the director of the Jewish Community Relations Council. Jackie, welcome to you.
Hi, Michael.
We have Asis Kaur. She is a member of the Sikh community. Asis, welcome.
Thank you.
We have Shakila Ahmad of the Islamic Center of Greater Cincinnati. Shakila, welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us on the phone from the Freedom Center is Christopher Miller. He is the senior education director there. Christopher, thank you for taking some time with us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we do want to talk about the coalition that has been created in response to hate in our community. It's called the Cincinnati Regional Coalition Against Hate. But our main purpose for talking is the statistic that was released by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the annual report on hate crimes as they were reported by law enforcement agencies. Barbara, from the YWCA, let's just start with you and get your reaction to what you think about the data that was released.
So the data is really misleading. I mean, that's the bottom line. That, first of all, we know a couple things. We know that hate crimes are underreported nationally and locally. In the 2017 to 2018 period, there was a dramatic rise in hate crimes, and the data bore out. What happened, though, with this latest round from 2018 is that there's 110 fewer organizations that actually reported the data. So we know that at least 85 cities with populations over 100,000 residents either did not report any data or reported zero hate crimes for 2018. We cannot address crimes that we're not measuring, and we need our law enforcement to identify, report, and respond to those targeted by hate violence.
So are you suggesting, Barbara, then that there's no way there's a zero count in those communities?
I would assert that there's no way there is a zero count.
Okay. And let me turn it over to Jackie from the Jewish Community Relations Council. Jackie, your thoughts on the data as well. Do you share Barbara's concerns?
Yeah, I think that in order to get your hands around what the problem is, you have to have accurate reporting to start with. I mean, I think that the data overwhelmingly, while we did see a slight drop off in 2018 from 2017, still shows that there's a marked problem with hate crime in our country and in our region. And I think, you know, anecdotally and other studies back that up. You know, you look at the ADL specifically when it comes to the Jewish community, they measure all hate crime, obviously. But from where I sit, you know, a 99% rise in anti-Semitic incidents in the last several years. So we know that hate crime is rising. And so I don't in any way want to discredit that these are serious things we have to respond to. But I think the big problem here is, you know, without an accurate count and without mandatory, reporting and without law enforcement that frankly knows how to identify hate crime and, a campaign to encourage victims to report. There's lots of junctions along the funnel of reporting that we have to make sure we're on top of in order to get a more accurate count of what's happening in our communities before we can figure out, you know, tactical strategies to deal with it.
Asis, for today, you represent the Sikh community of Cincinnati, and I'm wondering about your thoughts on the data.
I agree with both Barbara and Jackie on this, and truthfully speaking, as bad as this sounds, we're confident that these numbers are higher, and I say that because only 13% of the law enforcement agencies reported any data at all. So there's a lot of underreporting, there's a lot of non-reporting, so we are certain that these numbers are higher. And as far as the Sikh community is concerned, we saw an increase of 200% between 2017 and 2018.
So that percentage sounds extremely high. What does it mean in raw numbers?
It means for the data that was reported, the incidents went from 20 to 60.
Wow. Okay. And Shakila from the Islamic Community Center of Greater Cincinnati, are your thoughts similar?
Well, I think we're all very much in agreement, having worked in this area and looked at the data from year to year and dealing with it internally, that the numbers are underreported and not comprehensive. I think, you know, the core issues that we want to try to get into is why are they not reported and what is it that we can do in order to help law enforcement and communities be able to be in a position where they can report? And then how is it that then we collectively can work together in order to address the problems? And I can attest to the fact that there are many incidents that have happened within the Muslim American community regionally that have either gone unreported or unrecognized as hate crimes by law enforcement because of a number of these issues that we collectively want to work on and are trying to work on.
Christopher Miller from the Freedom Center is on the phone with us. Christopher, you've seen the data as well. What are your thoughts?
I'm in agreement as far as with my cohorts reflecting back on the data. The thing about from a historical standpoint is that often a lot of these crimes go unreported. And that's something that's been consistent over time. And also to the identification, some agencies, how they identify hate, calling it when you see it, and that's with anything, even with racism, how do you identify and recognize racism and hatred and things of that nature? And so sometimes from agency to agency, there's not a clear line of understanding the mission, and therefore you will have these gaps to where certain incidents don't get reported.
I guess my question would be to the panel is, how is a law enforcement agency supposed to distinguish between incidents or determine whether they are related to some type of minority, ethnic, religious, sexual status?
I think that this is where we have to work with law enforcement. You know, I mean, this is a collaborative effort, and I want to believe that it's not because law enforcement don't want to take these things seriously. It's because they have a lot on their plate. And, this is an area of their work that we as communities have to prioritize and invest in and help with. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that part of what we're doing at the coalition is making some headway there. We have representatives from law enforcement as part of our coalition. And they're valued members of our team and have been just incredibly collaborative in the kind of work that we've done and in wanting to address these issues to the best of their ability, you know, as we can. But all of this goes back to funding, right? All of this goes back to the resources that jurisdictions have to be able to invest in training. This isn't easy. It's not magic science. It doesn't happen without investment. And so we as communities have to demand and that there is our resources available to help, police prioritize this and to know what they're doing in this area.
And Chiquila, did you want to follow up to that?
Right. And I think there's a number of ways that you can approach in order to empower law enforcement to be more effective at, you know, what they need to be able to do in order to help us all have a less hateful society. And so it goes to the local level, working as a coalition in order to do cultural competency training to allow communities to understand how to have a relationship with law enforcement are two key vehicles by which we can, you know, work locally to make sure that we're ready to report and know where to report and that at the law enforcement site, we're ready to record. It also requires that we take a national look at this. And so one of the things that a number of us are very well aware of, and I was very much involved in the Muslim Jewish Advisory Council at the national level, bringing forth with bipartisan sponsorship the No Hate Act, which is really hopefully we can get it through the Congress and Senate in order to allow us to be able to provide resources to train and record and to bring back the data that's necessary in order to be able to allow other agencies to work on, resolutions. And so the No Hate Act is something that is at the national level, whereas work we do collectively as an anti-coalition, anti-hate coalition is at the regional level. So it takes people from all sides of the equation and at all levels in order to be able to understand, address, and then move forward.
I just want to ask, and we'll start with you, Barbara Perez from the YWCA. Is it surprising that race, ethnicity, or ancestry bias accounts for more than half of these numbers?
No, yeah. According to the literature that I've read, it's 60% is based on race or ethnicity. And then religion is the second highest cause, unfortunately. And within that, and Jackie knows this all too well, of that 20% that's related to religious views, that's 20%, and 58% of that is the Jewish population, and 14.5% is against Muslims.
Jackie, we are seeing across the country, at least in terms of media coverage, a spike in attacks against the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. From within the Jewish community, what is the conversation that's taking place around this?
Yeah, so, you know, this is not just, you know, what the media is reporting. This is actually statistically true that we, if you look at the trajectory of American history, in 350 years of, you know, Jewish American history, there were zero incidents of Jews killed in the midst of worship in their house of worship. And now we have in the last 14, 15 months, so 350 years, zero. And then in 14, 15 months, we have now four violent attacks on Jewish communities, Jewish gatherings, and three of those four were actually on Jews in the midst of prayer. So when you track that kind of an increase, that's something that clearly is alarming in the Jewish community. And, you know, how are we reacting in the Jewish community? We are doing everything we can to make sure that our communities are secure. And we're doing everything we can to ensure our communities that, you know, the best way to combat anti-Semitism, the best way to combat Islamophobia, the best way to combat racism is to be proudly who you are. Because, you know, at the end of the day, people who hate want to discourage people from being themselves and from, you know, expressing their individualism and from participating in America. And that's not what America's about. So, you know, we collectively have to stand up together and say, we're going to insist on our diversity. We're going to insist on who we are. And we're going to be proudly so. So that's what we're doing.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking about hate crime statistics, specifically as they relate to Cincinnati today. I'm joined in the studio by YWCA President and CEO Barbara Perez. Hello, Barbara.
Hi.
We have Jewish Community Relations Council Director Jackie Congito. Hello, Jackie.
Hey.
We have a Sikh community member, Asis Kaur. Asis, welcome.
Thank you.
We have from the Islamic Center of Greater Cincinnati, Shakila Ahmad. Welcome, Shakila.
Thank you.
And on the phone with us from the Freedom Center is Christopher Miller. Hello, Christopher.
Hello.
The Cincinnati Regional Coalition Against Hate is an organization that you are all a part of. Talk about what the formation of this group means.
You know, this was really an organic effort, particularly in the wake of Charlottesville, where we all sort of looked at each other and we were all people who have had relationships and, you know, collegial, professional and friendships really throughout the years. And we started to think we need a formal mechanism in Cincinnati to be able to respond as a group, a diverse group, when incidents of hate happen, and to start to think proactively across differences about how we work to get ahead of this issue. So, you know, we came together, 19 organizing partners from, you know, diverse affiliations, all representing targeted minority groups. And we started to think about what kind of work we could do.
So we formed the coalition about 2 years ago. And we've spent most of our efforts over the last 2 years, Michael, really focusing on that speaking out against hate. So, and we think that it's so powerful for us to speak with one voice. So it's not just the African-American community. It's not just the Sikh community or the Jewish community. It's all of us united, because we really think that when someone experiences an incident of hate or extreme bias, it's affecting that individual and certainly that family, but it's affecting our entire community.
Christopher Miller is from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center and is on the phone with us. Christopher, I would like to hear your perspective on what the Cincinnati Regional Coalition Against Hate could accomplish.
Oh, collectively, we can accomplish a great deal.
I think, you know, being a historian, you look at, it's often said that we are a country of laws. But from a historical standpoint, laws have been unfair. Laws haven't had the necessary justice towards certain groups. And so moving the needle to where we are becoming more of a country of justice, being a country of tolerance, and it begins with our own community, to have community where we foster justice, where we foster understanding, where we foster tolerance, and that we start to view those who we consider to be the other and identify with them and see them as us. And when we look at each other, we see each other as human beings. We see each other as fathers, mothers, sons, and daughters. And so I see this coalition being an opportunity and a vehicle of sharing that with the community so that we could collectively look at each other in that way instead of looking at each other as the other.
Asis, you heard me rattle off some numbers, and those are numbers, that's data, but those numbers do reflect people who experience these alleged crimes. You noted a 200% increase in hate crimes against members of your community. Can you give us an example locally of what something like that looks like?
Absolutely. So in Ohio, we actually noted that it had the third most anti-hate crimes in the nation. And in the 2018 report, it noted down 6 incidents of hate. And Ohio State University did jot down some anti-Sikh incidents on their campus. And we also saw that there's 11 other universities that didn't report anything, right? That doesn't mean that OSU is any less safer for Sikh students, but it also might mean that because they're recognizing it, they might have the tools to actually make their campus safer for all of the community that's there.
What specifically were some of these incidents?
The commonality among all of these incidents results from the religious identity that Sikhs carry, and it is a very distinct external identity. So, you know, in these incidents, we notice a lot of it is mixed in with, you know, anti-immigrant rhetoric. Most commonly we hear, right, people, you're not welcome here, go back to your country, using derogatory terms like terrorist, Osama bin Laden, and attacks that then end up becoming very ugly and violent, but oftentimes include these verbal assaults.
So just to add on to that, I think there's a lot of commonality and a lot of confusion between the Sikh community and the Islamic community. Muslims and Sikhs are, you know, individuals of different religions, but because head covering is a part of both of faith traditions. And so the Sikh men wear the turban, the Muslim women wear the hijab or the covering. So the incidents have included things like pulling off the hijab or the turban, trying to cut someone's hair when it's sacred to them, trying to, basically be aggressive and assaultive as a result of the individual's appearance, which is perceived to be, as Chris was noting, as the other, as something that's completely different, whereas the individual, whether it's Sikh, Muslim, Jewish, or whoever, may have been born and raised here for multiple generations, but yet they are associated with both something that is foreign and something that is completely not associated with these hate mongers feel constitutes as American. And so as a result, people are assaulted. They are verbally accosted. They are, physically excluded to people being, you know, shot and their lives being lost in places of worship.
And Jackie, as a representative of the Jewish community, what has happened locally to your community?
So, you know, we have had several incidents. We were thankful every day that, you know, things don't escalate more than they have. But we have had one incident actually in Montgomery where there was a man who in this case was not Jewish, but sort of heard someone speaking badly about Jews and stood up as sort of a righteous Gentile of our time, saying, you know, I'm Jewish, what's it to you? And was really beaten very badly for that. And actually, I think it was the first prosecution under the Matthew Shepard Act in this district. And the, you know, the assailant in this case was convicted. But, you know, these are really frightening times. And when we think about the fact that that's close to home in our own community, you know, I just think it's really important that we not only think about what we're against, but that we work hard to articulate the vision that we want to see for our community. And that's what I think that, you know, the unique power in this coalition, back to what Chris was saying, is that we have the opportunity across differences to say, this is what America is. This is what we stand for. These are the values that we should uphold here. And, you know, and we have a vision for that, an inspiring vision, one that's inclusive and compassionate and just. So, yeah, just to be sure that we're not just talking about what we're against all the time.
And the reason the YWCA Greater Cincinnati takes this so seriously and embraced the coalition and is the lead agency in the coalition is because our mission, which you may not know, Michael, is to eliminate racism, empower women, and promote peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all people. And so that's why this is critical for us.
We recently had a representative from your art gallery on, and we learned all about that mission statement.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, we're here talking about a problem. And I'm wondering what the solutions might be. It's kind of a broad question, I suppose, but I know that the formation of this organization is in response. And I think, Jackie, you may have referenced earlier a mechanism that can help facilitate some type of solution. Maybe you could elaborate on that a little bit.
So I think there's a couple of things that we can all do, right? And when we speak about the coalition on sort of a more meta level, but, you know, individually, this is the moment, you know, hate knows no political party, no one group. You know, everyone should be looking at their own relationships and their own circles and thinking about how they can challenge hate bias. You know, maybe it's not hate. Maybe it's just everyone has implicit bias. How can we look at ourselves, our families, and start to have some of these tough conversations with our friends and people we're in relationship with? Because at the end of the day, that's the way we're going to move the needle, is in relationship with people and trusting conversation with people about, have you thought about that? Have you thought about that view? Is this something you just take for granted? So I think individually, we start with our own tents. You know, so often we see finger pointing on the other side of the political aisle, they're the problem, on both sides, actually. And I think that if we took ownership in our own circles more, we would be in a better spot. And then I think, you know, in terms of the coalition, listen, there's plenty of ways for people to support the work of the coalition. You know, we have a strong presence online at cincinnaticoalition.org. You can go to our website and sign a anti-hate pledge that you're pledging against hate, and you'll be on our communications list. And as we have additional options to engage, we'll be sure to be in contact with everyone. And then, you know, back to what Shaquila was sharing in regards to legislation, like we really have to get our hands around what the problem is in order to develop effective strategies in dealing with it. So, you know, call your representatives, call your senators, and support the No Hate Act federally. The other thing is, in the midst of this increase in hate violence, there are resources that the government has made available, federal and state, to protect at-risk nonprofits and houses of worship from, you know, these sorts of attacks. And so, you know, if you're part of a vulnerable community, there are resources available. But by the way, we need more of those. And so, you know, if you have relationships with legislators, again, don't hesitate to raise your voice that, you know, we need help, all the help we can get to make sure that we can secure our communities adequately.
And I think part of the solution has to be, in addition to, you know, knowing the impact of our words, knowing the impact of our actions, and knowing the impact of our laws, is that the impact is not just on us. It's on us collectively and our city and our region collectively. So people may think, well, I don't need to worry about that. I don't need to do anything about it. No, it impacts people's desire to move here, to work here, and to, you know, to help us be stronger. So I think it's really important that our coalition is just not these 19 organizations, but we need every individual and every organization that is able to have a voice and impact to be in partnership with people in order to help us be a safer and better community.
And we will have a link to the Cincinnati Regional Coalition Against Hate, WVXU.org, inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. I want to thank all of my guests here today, Barbara Perez from the YWCA, Jackie Congito from the Jewish Community Relations Council, Aziz Kaur from the Sikh community, Shaquila Ahmad from the Islamic Center of Greater Cincinnati, and on the phone has been Christopher Miller from the Freedom Center. Thanks all of you for joining us and talking today.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.